Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast, No Sneezing, 457. Spencer's throwing me off. He's pulling a Josh.
No, he didn't open the soda right
back. No, but he sneezed or coughed right as I was, you know.
Sorry. But you get through Pittsburgh Comics now without, like, what's the name of my store again?
Well, that's true. I've
But you haven't gotten through your name, so.
Yeah, not yet, yeah. Okay, I'll do my best.
You're practicing, right?
In my head, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. Joining me tonight are
Brandon,
Dave,
Pat,
Mike,
Spencer.
Well, we already knew you were here.
Sneezy McMulligan.
Yes, exactly. So, not a ton of news. Revisiting and thinking over the Marvel thing. I'm so screwed. So, I got to come up with a big change in business model for the store. Because it dawned on me that the loss of discount there is going to really hurt. And I'm really assuming some other publishers are probably going to follow suit. And it's going to make things not good. So, yeehaw. So that's one of those things that I'm thinking about.
Their current business model is Bohica. Bend over, here it comes again.
Oh yeah. Because basically, I worked it out that I do about a 10% profit margin for the year.
Yeah.
And my Marvel discount just went down 7%. So my biggest selling category, my biggest selling publisher of my biggest category, I now am making
3% on instead
right,
of 10%.
Instead of 10%. Yeah. So, and Marvel covers things like the mortgage. And, you know, lots and lots of bills.
That's who keeps the lights on.
Right, because, you know, IDW is break-even. Boom, no offense, is break-even. I'm happy if, you know, Something is Killing the Children, I sell 25 copies of, but then Proctor Valley Road, I got in an extra 20 copies and sold none. So that's kind of a wash. IDW is a wash. All the small publishers are washes, you know.
Well,
so
that's the thing. Marvel and DC is what's
that's what pays
put,
the bills,
and that's what allows you to put the other books on the shelf.
DC has curbed its product output dramatically, and so they're not paying any bills. So really, it was relying on Marvel, and now that the Marvel books are going to be basically 7% more expensive,
is this the Penguin deal?
Yeah. So they're like, oh, but you get free shipping. My shipping on DC. Well, here, here's a perfect example. Let's see what next week. Nope, doesn't have it. I think this week was like $22 for shipping on DC. So that means I'm saving $22 but losing $200 in discount.
That works out, right?
That doesn't work out for me. So it's going to be, losing thousands of dollars a year.
You just don't understand how to run a business.
With no benefit to me. Actually, and it's more work because I have to do more orders. I have to do more receiving. It's just...
What if you buy them through... Diamond.
We don't know what the discount is yet.
Okay.
That's the problem, because I'm assuming they're going to be buying them from Penguin at 50% off and then selling them to us.
Right.
So, obviously, it'll be less.
And then my guess is it's going to be more complicated anyway, because there's not going to be last-minute orders for
them. Right. And then, right now, we can't reorder any DC product.
Yeah.
So, if it's that way for Marvel, too, it just makes things really, really hard.
Of course, the other question is, once Marvel goes to Penguin, is Diamond even going to be around?
Right. Are they going to be viable without Marvel and DC? So, yeah, these are all questions we don't have answers to. But, none of it is good for us. I keep seeing people talking about how good it is for us, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't see what you're seeing.
Who is?
Just
retailers?
People. Yeah. And I'm like, I just honestly do not see what you're seeing. I'm seeing product becoming more expensive for zero benefit to me.
Well, that's just called inflation. I mean, that happens anyway, but...
Right, but that's...
Yeah, but inflation goes at, 3%.
Right, but then all of a sudden, if they jump their prices by a dollar...
Right.
So now that I'm paying even more, percentage-wise. It's just... Yeah, it's just... not looking forward to this. So, yuck.
Plus now you got multiple vendors you got to deal with,
right?
And all that other headache.
Having to do separate orders for each publisher. I have to do a Marvel order, then I have to do a DC order, and I have to do a DC reorder.
And hoping that all of them ship when they're supposed to ship.
Right. And what if Marvel decides, hey, Thursday's our new comic day? because there's no reason they can't. DC decided to make Tuesday their new comic day without asking anybody, so who knows what could happen. Or Monday. Great. You know, and then I'm, you know, just...
Yeah, but then that means they got to get you the books by Friday.
Right. But that means I also have to work Monday.
No, I get that.
Yeah. But, joy. So, yeah, just everything. Everything sucks. But, yeah, it's just a great unknown. Luckily, it doesn't kick in till October, but we have to start ordering in August, and August doesn't seem that far away. And learning a new system to place orders on, which is always fun.
Yeah, learn their timing and their...
Right, because before, when Lunar first started, every order was additive. So let's say you had 20 on order, and you wanted to bump it by one, so you changed it to 21.
They sent you 41.
Correct. So, you know, learning little things like that. Which is always fun.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, not looking to forward to relearning the game as we go along. And the, again, the, just the big thing for me is where's the benefit to me, and I don't see any. So.
No, I mean, I think the only potential is that you're, you know, if you're with Penguin, you can get whatever books they distribute cheaper because you'll have a bigger discount, theoretically, because you're buying all your Marvel from them. But I don't know that that helps your business plan.
But it's not, it's lower discount than I have for most publishers.
But if you're buying direct from Random House in higher quantity because now you're getting your Marvel from them.
But they have a flat discount.
Oh, okay.
It's good for the guys who are like 40% discount. Yeah. They're looking at this as the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So, shame on me for ordering a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
lesson learned. So, yeah.
Well, I told you a long time ago, you got to stop chasing those incentive covers.
Yeah, no, just it might seriously considering going subs only and no longer shelving new comics.
Oh, wow.
That's the only way not to lose money.
Yeah, but that's...
I know, but every title book you see, I've lost money on. Everyone you see on the shelf.
I get that.
You know, that's the fun part. We start looking at the shelf and going $2. That's adds up quick. So, but they're kind of forcing our hand. So.
Yeah.
But at least I get a discount with them as opposed to bad idea.
You got to pay for the privilege there.
Yeah. Now, that speaking...
That must be why they gave you that $200 during the the pandemic, because they knew they were going to stick it in later.
Yeah. So, Bad Idea had a great announcement on Thursday.
April Fool's.
This was a fantastic announcement, and just giddy with excitement over it. So, they announced a new book, Hank Howard Pizza Detective in Caligula's Safe. That rolls off the tongue.
I want that pizza book.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, they rolled this out to the fans before they told the stores what was going on. So I had somebody calling up for the pizza book. And I went, what? Yeah. And so then the second part of their plan on this is that they're going to be, it's only going to be $1. And they're going to send them to us for free. So I don't have to pay anything for these books.
Except for shipping.
Is this for real?
Yeah. So, but it's limited to our quantity that we got of ENIAC 1.
The amount you ordered?
The amount we ordered, I believe. But then where the fun part comes in, it comes out May 12th. But you have to buy it May 12th. Any unsold copies at the end of the day on May 12th, including books in people's folders, have to be returned to Bad Idea.
How would they be able to manage that anyway?
Right, but...
Yeah, I get it.
So I'm getting 25 copies. Is this worth $25 worth of annoyance? No.
You could sell it for $4 a piece.
Right,
then
but
maybe.
For $1. So my maximum profit on it is $25. How much aggravation am I going to have for this book?
Well, judging by their other two titles, I'd say significant.
Yeah. And having to, you know, pull it for people, then go back through the folders and pull it out. And Challengers was talking about it because they're due mail order. And they're like, I'm not coming in to do mail order on a Wednesday because it has to be mailed out that day according to their rules. And he's like, I'm not coming in to mail out dollar comics, you know, wasting my time. You know, it's like it's not even worth my time ringing up a dollar comic.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have those customers, too, that come in, like, the next day mad.
Yeah.
Even though that they know that the rule is.
Or they just want this book, so now I'm, you know, it's 35 cents per swipe on a credit card. So now, you know, oh, now I'm making 65 cents on it. Joy. Yeah. You know, it's just.
Well, the mail order thing, that's just logistically impossible.
Right.
Because.
But they're telling people.
Your FedEx guy or your the post office closes before regular business hours.
Yeah.
So.
No, I get you. Yeah, just they're really doing their best to live up to their name, and I'm just looking on message boards. I'm seeing a lot of stores just going this, and I'm one of them just going, this is not worth the effort. You know,
this is just going to be a big nope for me.
Yeah.
And what I don't get, these are not rookies; these are people that ran a viable company for years.
And the thing that really sucks is the comics seem to be really good. Like, ENIAC number one was a great first issue.
But, regardless of that piece, that's a creative piece. I'm talking about the actual business model. Like, I am dumbfounded by this.
Yeah. How is this a benefit to me? You know, I'm not trying to make it all about me, but you're asking me to jump through hoops. For $25?
Well, 65% of that.
Right. So, yeah, it's just kind of blah. That's all I got.
Man.
We did get, Mike, do you have a question?
I do. Would you like me to ask it?
No. So we did get one question from James. This was it. I'm out of the loop on this one. But it was simply Geoff Johns discuss. So I had to ask these guys what was going on. So
there's a couple things going on. They finally did a story about Ray Fisher's whole complaint with Justice League, and Geoff Johns was...
And Whedon and his shit, too.
Well, yeah, Whedon, but it Geoff Johns specifically that... You know, he kind of got involved in some things he shouldn't have. He said a lot of dumb things, and you know, his whole thing is we can't piss off Joss Whedon, which is ridiculous. But one of the things that was used to come to Geoff Johns' defense is, one, that he is Lebanese-American, two, that he was married to a black woman for 10 years, and three... He's now married to an Asian woman and has a child with this woman.
It doesn't give you right to be a jerk off.
Well, not only that, then that doesn't mean you can't be racist. That just means.
And the thing that I read it that was they wanted an actor on Krypton to like play Superman's dad or something like that.
No, Jor-El's dad.
Jor-El's dad.
Yeah, so Superman's grandfather.
But he wasn't a white guy.
He was a black guy.
And they were like, and he was like, Superman's a white guy. You can't do that.
Really? Because Nick Fury is a white guy until he wasn't. And I love Samuel L. Jackson. Iris West was white in the comics until she wasn't. And that worked out fine. I love Joe on the Flash show. I don't like Iris.
Yeah. But that's the kind of racism that's really bad. Because that's specifically, don't give this guy a job. Even though it seems like he had already been, like, vetted for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, gotten through auditioning and things like that.
Had you said, this is the direction we're going with it. We're going to see Superman. We're going to see Jor-El. We want something in the prototypical Christopher Reeve model. That's not going to work. Okay, that's fine if that's the direction of the show. But that wasn't the direction of the show. Why couldn't you have done something like that? And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think there's times it works and there are times it doesn't work. For example, Michael B. Jordan is Johnny Storm, I don't think worked. But Samuel L. Jackson...
I don't know. Nothing in that movie worked. Yeah. That's a hard one.
Well, but also because you have, like... That It just didn't work. But Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury works. No issue there. And, you know, this guy could have been perfect for what he was. You know, to be... And I don't know Jarrell's father's name. I don't think it matters.
Who cares? I mean, just let actors be actors. And it doesn't... And he's an alien race. Who's to say?
Right.
Somebody's not purple.
Well, the other thing is, in the Snyderverse, they're all like test tube babies.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, you're right. But even like, you know, there was more to it when they were talking about, I guess there was some issue because they didn't want Ray Fisher to be the angry black man. And then he had a problem with the booyah scene because he had to say a catchphrase and no one else did. And he felt like it was, you know, very, you know, Gary Coleman, you know, what you talking about, Willis, or you know, Jimmy Walker with Dynamite. And he didn't want to do that. And it's like, okay, that's kind of legitimate, especially, you know, you didn't have Gal Gadot saying, you know, great Hera, or have you know, Henry Cavill do up, up and away, or you know, something like that. So I kind of get that. And look, Geoff Johns has an encyclopedic knowledge of DC Comics, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing to have him on set. But I think maybe just be careful.
That's the thing. Like,
have HR.
I don't understand what qualified him to do that job, because like being a comic book nerd, writing comics does not like it he doesn't for, translate to.
He worked for like, Richard Donner,
a producer.
No,
position,
he worked though. For Richard Donner too. That's how he got his Hollywood star. Yeah.
Well, he's also co-wrote Wonder Woman 84 too. It's just,
well,
right, but writing and producing are different things.
Yeah, no, they are. And I don't know if he was implicated in the whole. Joss Whedon threatened Gal Gadot, so she actually ended up taking it to the head of Warner Brothers. She jumped several steps in the chain and was like, "This is bullshit. Yeah. This isn't okay."
The other thing is,
he threatened her career.
Yeah. I bet Gal Gadot could totally beat the S out of John Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. She was an Israeli soldier. I mean,
yeah,
I know
they like
all Israelis.
No, Krav Maga and all kinds of.
Yeah, I'd take her in that fight.
Yeah.
With no problem. Any day and twice on Sunday. But at the same time, you know, she wants to have a career, and that's a shame that they would do that. And at least what I read, a lot of what she said was legitimate, that there was a distinct change in personality and the character between the Wonder Woman movie and the Justice League movie, and she wanted it to be more kind of a natural progression rather than, you know, that distinct change. It's like, okay, that's fair, although, you know, Batman was serious in Batman versus Superman and jokey in Justice League, and that was a problem. So it wasn't like they were picking on her there. They were doing that to other characters as well. I don't know. I don't get why it's just... Why is it hard to not be a scumbag?
Because you're in Hollywood.
No. If it was just Hollywood, then you go, okay, it's Hollywood.
Oh, I know.
But it's not just Hollywood.
But it's typical for Hollywood people to do stuff like that.
You know, I don't know. Let him go back to writing comics.
Okay, this fits into my question. You may
feel
free to name this person. What comic book creator that everyone seems to love?
Oh, sorry.
But you are in the minority and don't like at all?
Grant Morrison.
I don't dislike Grant Morrison, but Grant Morrison is hard to read.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I've read of his that's just boring.
And it's not boring to me. It's just like my head hurts after reading it, and I don't want my head to hurt. I want to enjoy what I'm reading, not feel like I gotta analyze everything. Like, I still haven't gotten through Multiversity. I just can't do it. I can't get through it. Yeah. It's not that it's not good. I enjoy what I read, but my head hurts every time I try to read it.
Colin?
Honestly, I can't think of anybody that I just flat don't like.
John Jones.
No. I like Jones's books. And no problem there. I think he's done a lot of good work.
John's Green or Green Lantern was
great. Yeah, that was a great idea. His Flash was good. Yeah. I never read his like JSA stuff, but I know that was supposed to be really, really good.
Oh, his JSA was great. Yeah.
So yeah,
Yeah, it's the thing. If I don't like somebody, I just don't read them.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody where like a writer, I just don't like their writing.
Could be an artist. Too.
Some artists I'm not a huge fan of. Yeah, I can't really think anybody specifically where if I see him on a book, I'll avoid it.
Yeah.
Bad idea. Oh, sorry.
That's a publisher, but
I think with all the guys that are like big names, like. There is something that they have done that is good, but like a lot of it is like, you know, their 50th thing is not as great. Like I love Garth Ennis, but some Garth Ennis stuff is like really almost unreadable.
Yeah. Right? For me, it's like Neil Adams started out fantastic and then he just became, I don't even know what he does now. It's just awful. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate him or dislike him immensely. It's just, dude, stop. You know, you're tarnishing what you did. You know?
But the problem is he didn't get paid for what he did. Now that he has a name, he's got to keep going to make his money.
Oh, I understand that, but still.
But like that last Superman that Frank Miller did, I bought that expecting it not to be as good as it was.
Oh, I thought it was great.
But yeah, it was great, but I was surprised that it was great.
Yeah, he has. Frank, yeah, especially Frank if you read Holy
Frank
Terror.
Frank has not
yeah.
been great yeah. for 20 years, and I think he's got issues. I think he's clean and sober now, so maybe he's...
Yeah. He had health issues beyond just that.
He still has health issues.
Yeah, but like I was not expecting that to be good and because he's been on that down, but so it's the kind of thing where it's like these guys put out so many books that they can't all be all be, you know, home runs.
Yeah, I agree.
One that I don't like, I don't completely hate because I'm still getting a book that he does, but that I really don't like as much as I think other people do is like Jonathan Hickman. I think like a lot of his stuff is just kind
of... Some of it can be imprintable.
He's Grant Morrison for me.
Yeah.
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 I just...
Yeah, like I was enjoying East to West, but then it got off schedule and I couldn't get caught up.
I think that I enjoyed his Flash run, but even at points in time doing that, I was still just kind of like, what's going on now? And then like I stopped his Avengers run.
Yeah,
like I stopped.
Avengers stuff was...
I just stopped.
After a while.
Yeah, and then... His X-Men stuff has been whatever, you know. I'm just getting that just
sadly,
because I like X-Men. You
sadly,
know?
The X-Men stuff is becoming impenetrable, and if you haven't been reading it, you can't just jump in on an issue.
Yeah.
Like I tried jumping in on that one where they were going into the vault, and it was like I literally have no idea who these characters are or what's going on. And that's not a good place to be when you're reading X-Men. That should be a fairly accessible book.
Yeah.
And the thing, you mentioned East to West. I read the first trade of that and did not like it, but I did like his House of X and stuff. Like, but I think the difference is with East to West, I had to learn all new characters. With X-Men, I knew pretty much everybody. So, like, it got me through like a little bit more of that impenetrable, you know, it got me to like the second layer. So
is he still doing any independent stuff? Or is he just all doing
not right now, but I think when they give you the X books, you gotta focus on that.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to think of people I don't just flat out don't like. I don't think there's anybody I can't think of anybody.
Is Alan Moore still producing? Is he done?
I think he's done. I think that last League of Extraordinary Gentlemen book, I think he said was the end of his.
Okay. I know Caleb's trying to work his way through Jerusalem, and
he bought that. That was a big book. Colin, but no, I'm kidding.
Oh, you don't like Colin,
I can't read half the titles out. Yeah. No, I honestly can't think of anyone. I'm sorry, Mike.
It's all good.
I mean, and then the only other thing I could say is, like, artists, or read, like, writers that I haven't, like, followed, like Al Ewing, like, I don't ever, I haven't really read anything I think that he's put out, so, but, you know, people seem to really like most of what he does, but I've hardly ever read any, you know, any of it.
But that's different than I just don't like the guy. Yeah, true. That's, I haven't read it.
Yeah. And with artists, if you're a bad artist, I just don't learn your name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of artists that, yeah,
yeah,
I just
there's
don't.
An artist that continues to work, and his name's Rob, and...
Yeah, but he's got, he gets sales based on his name. But think about it, he can't even do like 5 books a year. So, you know, it's not like there's a ton,
but
ton there.
In Liefeld's defense, back in the 90s, his books were exciting. Like, you know, he was drawing for style and action, not like anatomical correctness. And he does hit on that, right? There is something to that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he does it anymore. I think now it's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, the only thing I think he's doing right now is the G.I. Joe thing. And,
yeah. Well, he did the Immortal Hulk cover. It's a Deadpool variant.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the feet are messed up.
Yeah.
Legs and feet are not right.
But that's 25, 30 years. Dude, you need to start caring. And if you don't, stop taking people's money. That's the other thing. I'm sure he's a nice dude.
Yeah, at this point, he's more of a businessman than an artist.
I rode in an elevator with him at one of the Wizard ones. This was years ago in Pittsburgh, and he was a nice guy. He looked like a surfer dude. He had his sandals on and his shorts on, and everything was just real pleasant. He was a real nice guy.
So, it's probably the same convention. I went and got the first appearance of Deadpool signed by him, and he was super cool throughout the whole thing, and high energy and stuff like that. But
some people just can't draw feet. It is what it is. You move on.
Feet are hard.
Yeah, you just draw them from the knee up, and then you don't have that problem.
Just put strategic rocks.
Well, I mean, like, how many hands have like extra thumbs and stuff like that?
That's what doing more work. See, and you're complaining.
Though, was his eyes ever pointed in different directions?
Not that I can think of.
So that's a win in Collins book.
As an artist, and if you are an artist, you have to master your craft. You draw it every single day. And you will get better. And if you don't, you're lazy. End of story. He's lazy. There's no other way to put it. He doesn't draw backgrounds. He doesn't draw feet. He doesn't draw things where they should be.
Trees are hard.
Trees are hard. Oh, John Romita Jr. is going back to DC.
No, Marvel.
Oh, Marvel. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's some news. I don't know if
we talked about that last week.
Did you?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, see, sure, had you showed up, Mike.
Yeah. Listen, apparently.
They killed the New Gods and
the Trench. Okay, to be honest, who thought either one of those movies was ever seen alive?
The New Gods, I was maybe thinking.
No. Yeah.
So the New Gods is completely...
It's dead.
Oh, wow.
So the only reason I thought the New Gods might have a chance was because if they did the Miracle Man story, like, that doesn't need such a super high budget, because it's not like the Snyder Cut with CGI the whole
this
way
thing?
Through.
No, it never got past script stage.
Okay. Right.
But that's just it. I mean, if you just did a Miracle Man movie, yeah, you can get away with that on the cheap, but if you're doing a proper New Gods movie... Mm-hmm. That ain't gonna be a cheap movie.
Did you just say that almost have to be like Lord of the Rings, like kind of level with like the, you know, the graphics and like finding cool places to shoot and stuff like that?
Well, no, it's gonna be all green screen because it's all, you know, you're gonna spend a lot of time on Apocalypse and that's gonna be and that's the other piece is half your characters are gonna be CGI, or at least partial CGI. So, it's just going to get overly expensive to do things like that. And the Trench, I mean...
That one I wasn't...
Well, it was supposed to be like a horror movie.
Yeah, I get that, but... So what?
Yeah.
So, just have him show back up in Aquaman 2 if you really want to do that. I was a bigger fan of the Crab People anyway.
We're getting a giant Starro.
We're getting a giant Starro in Suicide Squad.
What else could you ask for?
Num-nums.
Life is good.
Penis is on peach.
I would do it.
For liberty? I would do it.
I would do that.
He wears his costume everywhere.
Did you see him on Colbert?
I've seen him on like two talk shows so far. He's had it.
Here's the thing about John Cena.
James tweeted he can't get it off.
He's a great promoter and he's all in.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, you figure that's a wrestling lifestyle. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I'm not criticizing him at all. That's my favorite part of him.
You probably figure it's better than walking around with a goofy hat and a big chain and too baggy of a shirt and stuff. Have them go like this all the time.
Yeah, but he makes kids happy.
Absolutely.
So what'd you read, Mike?
Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
I'll start with The Flash 768.
All right, Dad.
Which is a brand new story arc that basically Wally is back and... Wally is basically confessing to Barry and Green Lantern and a bunch of other ones that he's done. He just doesn't want to do this anymore. And
is it real Wally or is it Dr. Manhattan Wally?
It's real Wally. And he just doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to risk it. He just doesn't want to do this thing anymore. And Barry,
he got the family, he got the kids and the wife back now. Things are kind of actually normal.
Yeah. And then Barry's like, no, you got to do it. And then Oliver is like, no, let him do what he wants to do. And he basically said he just killed 10 people. And it's like, you're just going to say, hey, come back and be a hero. And for whatever reason, Barry and Wally decide to have this race.
Well, because that's how they're going to cut him off through the Speed Force.
So they
have to be in the Speed Force or something to do it.
So he
wanted to
take his powers away. And what happens was the reverse happens.
Barry loses his power?
Well,
Barry,
some kind of energy thing happens and hits them.
Barry loses his power. Wally disappears.
Well, it's all speedsters.
Yeah.
All speedsters, you lose that power.
Specifically, Wally ends up in...
like Jurassic period.
Jurassic period with dinosaurs are moving like with super speed and all this other stuff.
Yeah, this raptor's chasing him that also has super speed.
And then Barry's just doing what he can to try to communicate with him. So him and Ollie kind of work this thing out with Mr. Terrific. And he kind of like contacts him, like, where are you at? What are you doing? And then while he tries to come back and something else happens again, he does another travel and boom, he's in Bart Allen's body in the future.
So it's Quantum Leap.
Yeah,
he's traveling through all the, because like, when he was in the Jurassic period,
that's a good point.
When he was in the Jurassic period, and yeah, it is kind of like that, because like he looks into like a stream of water, and you don't, like, he doesn't see his face, he sees this
Cro-Magnon dude, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But we see him as Wally, so yeah, it is kind of like that, with jumping into a person's body and stuff like that.
Yeah, he sees himself as small Bart Allen, but he's really big Wally West.
Does he say, oh boy?
He says something that's very Bart-like, I can't remember what he says.
Maybe, yeah.
It was fun, it was interesting, it was... $4.99,
$5.99
book?
It was a bit of a bigger book, though. But I'm hoping maybe with it being the first issue, they might have just
added extra.
Done it bigger, or gonna start, you know, like they've been doing with everything else, like have like another speedster backup story, you know, in the back or something.
Crossover number 5.
Yeah, right there.
I really liked it. I love the artwork, and I love the fact that Madman's in it with the sword. And he ultimately gives the sword over to the blonde girl. I can't remember.
Ellipsis.
Yeah.
Ellie, yeah.
And she's just like, okay, and takes it, and all. She sees everything. Oh, my gosh, blah, blah, blah. I'm just giving a fast scenario. And then the little girl is, like, going off, showing her powers. And then the end was kind of like, we need to stop the little girl, and the dude has his gun pointed, and there was some green stuff in there, like,
yeah, because well, that's the gun we get in the first issue.
We finally know why he was given that gun.
Okay.
Well, we think we know why.
Well, yeah.
it's just been a really fun book. Sometimes I don't know what the heck's going on, but I just enjoy the story. I love the artwork where some people are in the complete the old dot patterns, and then Madman's in it, the sword's in it, he's crossing over things. And then we find out who the one guy that was supposedly in the costume, he had like no powers, but he, I guess he attached a bomb to himself.
Yeah, it's the guy, the pastor was keeping.
Yeah. And then he blew himself up, and that's when everything just went like off the rails.
Yeah, so everyone escaped from the powerhouse prison.
Yeah. I liked it. I still continue liking it. We're on issue 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
The book I loved the most last week was Nuclear Family number 2.
Yeah.
I just love this book, what's going on so far. So this family who is in Wisconsin...
Well, they think they're in 1958 Wisconsin.
Exactly. And they get taken by the soldiers, and the one soldier takes his mask off, and it's literally the guy, the father's friend who worked with him at the car dealership. And he's like, Dan. He's like, what are you talking about? And he's acting like he doesn't know him, never seen him before. And they basically take him underground to this underground city because, was it Minneapolis? Is that the city?
No, it was Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, I'm sorry. And Milwaukee's been gone. Milwaukee's blown up, but they have this underground city that continues to function. They're feeding people. And they bring down, I guess, maybe like the main guy behind there. And he's asking him, like, what's going on? What are you doing? How did you survive? And ultimately, towards the end, the daughter goes, this is crazy. What year is this? And the guy's like, what do you mean, what year is this? That's a silly question. And the soldier guy goes, it's 1968, and they still think it's like 1958, and what's going on? And the one guy says, the very end says, what have you been doing the last 10 years, and what's going on? I just think it's really, really cool. It's well written. And that's all I remember. I read one other one, but I don't remember it. So, I'm done.
You're good.
I will. Batman Catwoman.
There it is.
What number are we on?
This is number 4. I'm not... So... I'm not really sure what's going on. Like, the time jumps keep getting to me.
And
doing that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Is it just me? Were they doing, like, time jumps on the same page?
Yes, that's what it felt like.
Like, you know, like, the top panel was in the past, or the future, and the other, you know, was vice versa? Was that,
yeah, because you'll look like it's young Selena... And then
old Cobblepod.
Yeah, or you know, and then on the next page it's her daughter, which you know is fully grown up and in a Batman costume. So obviously that's not young, you know.
Yeah.
So it's real hard to tell. But at some point, Phantasm,
which we finally get to see.
Yeah,
I think it's like the first time really seeing.
No, we've had a couple of like. Distant shots, but like this is the first good splash page.
This is Phantasm from the animated.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
But you know, she captured Selina because there's some connection with Selina and the Joker, and I guess like their daughter is talking to like all these you know old villains, and they're like, yeah, you know. No one really trusted the Joker except for Selina had some kind of connection with him, and that part was just weird, but I guess it really isn't, because...
Because there was, like, this... She knew that the Joker was planning on blowing up, like, the
ice rink.
Yeah, and then, like, waited till, like, the last minute to tell Batman, which at that point, I thought he was about to get blown up, because... Well, it went to ha-ha, you know, but still, like, yeah, I don't know. That was a weird scene for me.
Yeah. It's not a bad story. It's hard to follow at points, though. Future State, Superman versus Imperius Lex, number 3.
I read that.
I don't remember.
Okay. So, Superman and Lois... go back to basically they're going to evac whoever wants to leave Lexor, and Lex blames B99, who is his little robot buddy.
Okay.
for letting Superman escape and destroying their economy and all that. So he banishes him to the moon. And when he gets to the moon, he figures he's going to help by Superman had wiped the memory of one of the mining robots, and it gets sent back to Lexor and then attacks the planet. And of course, the whole time it's going on, you know, Lex is denying the whole thing at first. He's like, it plays off like something that would have happened here not even 6 months ago, you know. It's fake news and all this other stuff. And eventually, you know, the people get rescued by Superman, and they realize, okay, he wasn't the villain all along, and then see, oh, wait, this was Lex's robot the whole time, because he's, of course, denying that it was his robot. But they find, like, how do you like my robot? And there's a picture of Lex on it.
The robot's so loyal to him, it just wants to be appreciated.
So, you know, Lex, of course, gets arrested in the end, and it goes from there. But, there are parts of that book that just hit way too close to home at times. It's like
very, very political.
I looked at it as a fable, like what happens when a megalomaniac wants all consuming power.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that could never happen in real life. I mean, seriously.
No, not at all.
Controlling media and dwindling resources and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's just crazy talk.
I don't know where he came up with that.
Guy's got an imagination. You know, first Frankenberry fan fiction, and now this. Strange Adventures number 9.
I read that.
You read that one.
It's the only book I read.
So, I'm still confused. When he gas attacks the pricks, was that in the past or was that on Earth?
I think that was in the past.
I think that's Rand. That's how he took out the pricks on Rand.
Yeah.
That's how he won the war.
Okay. But, so, the Justice League releases a statement that basically, it doesn't condemn him necessarily, but it doesn't look good. And then Elena goes on, you know, Fox News or whatever it is, and says, yeah, he did it. I'm glad he did it, because if he didn't do it, we'd all be dead. And, you know, in a few, you know, you guys have just started to see what these guys are capable of, and you're going to be glad when he does it for you, too. So she's trying to put the spin on what's going on. It's playing with time, and sometimes it's hard to tell what's in the future and what's in the past and what's current. Mr. Terrific starts to write a letter, but he just says he's going to tell Elena the truth, but we don't actually see what else he tells her. So there's clearly more to the story than what we know so far. I really enjoy the book. I don't always know what's going on, but it's a fun read, if nothing else. Let's see. And the last one I'll talk about is Bite Size number 4. Anybody read that?
Nope.
No? Okay. So this was the last issue, and it definitely stuck the landing. Although totally predictably, the kids are chased off by the robots that were replicated to attack humans, and the other robots who they had kind of befriended tried to help the kids and the family, and the little girl rescues one of them from, I don't even call them evil robots because they're not really evil. And then when that happens, the kind of head of those guys shuts them all down and goes, well, you know, we've only ever seen humans be horrible to us. You're actually trying to defend us. And then, you know, they leave, and as they leave, you know, the government agents are kicking in the door saying, you know, hey, we think you found some of our property, and you know, it kind of leaves on a, or ends on a perfect, you know, point where the robots have kind of escaped, and they're going to go off to try to, you know, find their place in the world. But it was a real cute, fun story. It definitely goes, it feels like Batteries Not Included or one of those movies from the 80s. So, another AWA book. It's four issues, so it'll be, what, $9.99 when it comes out in trade? And
I mean, yeah. $9.99. Yeah, all their books are $9.99. Yeah. So far, I mean, I don't see it changing.
Well, I mean, this one's only four issues, so I would assume it'll be that. But, you know, it'd be a fun read if you haven't read it. That's it. Dave?
Okay. Start with The Department of Truth.
I read that.
Number 7.
Tinfoil hat.
This is, Doc Hunt's the tinfoil hat. This is a flashback of when he was 15 years old in 1964, and he got interested in UFOs because he thought they were coming to monitor the Earth to see if Earth was ready for its next step in evolution. And he writes a book. It's all about the Men in Black. He wrote a book to resist the Men in Black. And there's some excerpts from the book, and they're all true stories, at least in history of, you know, people visited by the Men in Black, who look to be more like alien creatures. Because he has an encounter with one at the end of the book, and, you know, he's the aliens flying above the ground a little bit.
Well, it's the lady in red with the X's, right?
Yeah.
So it's like she took on some kind of form, or like he the Men in Black, whatever they seem to have some kind of like telepathy, because like people like they get headaches when they come, and like they see them, but then they disappear. Like, are they there? Are they not there? Are they just in their minds? And that's why he starts wearing the tinfoil. He had wrapped all his books in tinfoil to keep them pristine. And
then, all these science fiction magazines.
Yeah, when the black Men in Black actually come for him, he realizes that they're mind controlling him, and he, you know, puts the tinfoil hat on.
Yeah, so he's talking to. Then it, you know, leaps forward a little bit when he's talking to Lee Harvey Oswald, when Lee Harvey Oswald was first recruited, and Oswald wants to. It ends with Oswald wanting to get one of these creatures, I guess.
Yeah, and this is probably my favorite issue so far, not because there was like a big reveal or anything, but like the tinfoil hat kid. What's he call himself? Doc Hines. Doc Hines. He explains everything, like, really well. So it's like this book is almost like a recap of what it was, because he has like he sort of figured out what's going on in terms of like the UFOs. Where he's like, well, I don't know if I believe these people, but like they believe it,
right?
And like, what's the nature of truth, kind of thing. So,
yeah, I think it's all really well done. I'm really engrossed in the book.
Yeah, and the art is not that sketchy style anymore. So it's
I don't know if is he the artist? Is he the permanent?
I don't
artist
know.
Now I wonder,
is it just a fill in, or like are they going to switch every arc, something like that?
Yeah, Martin Simmons, original artist, man. I'm sure it takes a lot of time to do that kind of work. But, yeah, this has been great. I'll bring up X-Men.
Oh, I read that.
19.
Yeah, I read that.
This is the Children of the Vault storyline. What happens? Let's sync X-23 and Darwin. Tells the story of what happened to them when they're inside the vault trying to get intel on these children, these third generation children, and they figure out, it shows they figure out you know, how to mask their comings and goings and when they could go out.
Yeah.
All these like crazy places inside this vault.
Yeah. This issue felt like a montage.
Yeah.
Like, I liked it, but like it was bad storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, it was mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. it was just like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened.
Yeah.
Right? And it gets to a nice, like, a nice place because I think it's Sink is the only, is it Sink or Darwin that gets out? I think it's Sink.
Gets
out of the vault. Only one of them gets out of the vault.
Sink, yeah.
So, yeah, so Sink gets out of the vault, and he in there, they'd been there for like 100 years in vault time. And he basically falls in love with X-23.
Yeah.
But so he gets out of the vault. His memory is synced. But X-23's and Darwin's, their memories, because they died in the vault, when they get reincarnated, they don't remember.
Right, right.
So now Sync has this 100-year, you know, experience that they don't share. And he's in love with X-23. But she gets out of the tank and is like, what are you looking at?
Did Darwin come back? I wasn't clear on that at the end.
He dies in the vault, but, yeah, but no, he is reanimated.
Okay. Because the crux of the story is that they capture Darwin inside the vault and they atomize him and they use his DNA or whatever to create the fourth generation children. They thought the third generation would be able to mm-hmm. conquer the Earth, but they need a fourth generation.
Yeah. So now they have the new super generation can come out of the cool. vault. And,
okay.
You know, be a...
Yeah,
Bye, Tim.
Resurrected, they tell Professor X and X-Men, you know, what happened and what happened to Darwin and the plants. At least Sync does, I guess they did.
Yeah. I feel like had this issue been the last issue, and they wouldn't have, like, two-parted this, I would have liked it much more.
Yeah.
Because a one-issue montage makes sense, but, like, the pacing that they had for the last issue then comes into this, and it feels like it's like, oh, now we're going in just super fast forward. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It pays off well, because I like the idea of, you know, like, there's consequences to this reanimation, because now, you know, Sync has feelings that aren't reciprocated.
Right.
Even though X-23 sincerely had them.
Yeah.
So.
And lastly, I'll mention Edgar Allan Poe's Snifter of Blood, number 6. Final issue of this miniseries. There's a...
Next one's Snifter of Brandy, I think.
So. Snifter of Brandy? Oh, that'd be good. No, there's going to be another series. yeah, it helps a little know a little bit about Edgar Allan Poe, and I had to look some stuff up after reading this, because the first issue is another take on the Mask of Red Death. It's a black and white story where the Red Death is a superhero and who's hunting the Prospero down in his mansion where the party's going on. And the other story was about this guy, Rufus Griswold, who was a big critic of Poe during Poe's time and after he died, and it's about the devil coming to Griswold and inviting him to a dinner in hell.
Yeah. Oh, hi. Oh,
little does he know that he's going to be the main course.
Oh, jeez.
So another interesting story. I had to look up the Griswold stuff. That was
so it's
interesting.
Real?
Yeah, he was like a critic of Poe. They were during his time. They were competing for the same jobs, and Griswold wrote Poe's obituary and just like impounded him for I'm not sure the exact reasons, but then for the 8 years, you know, he lived after Poe's death, just continued to criticize him.
The man's dead. Let him go.
No, so So in this story, Griswold does get like roasted like a pig, and Walt Whitman, he must have criticized Walt Whitman too, because Walt Whitman's holding the spit for criticizing his Leaves of Grass. And that's all I got.
All right.
Brandon, anything else?
The best comic I read last week, Beta Ray Bill. It's a King in Black tie-in, but, like, not really. I honestly think it probably hurt itself being a King in Black tie-in.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it sold very well, but, yeah.
Yeah, you were sold out by the time I got here.
Well, it's Beta Ray Bill.
No,
you know,
I know.
No offense. I didn't order, you know, a boatload.
And that's why I figured you would have some on the shelf.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Beta Ray Bill, this is kind of ties into Thor, but they explain everything that happened in Thor, so you don't need to read Thor. But so in Thor, Thor has broken Beta Ray Bill's hammer. They got into a fight, and as a result of the fight, Thor broke Stormbreaker, and Stormbreaker is Beta Ray Bill's hammer that gives him the powers of Thor, but it also allows him to turn from his horse, like, mechanical cyborg horse form to like a regular human, or like a, not well, his species,
Corbinite,
thank you. So he is like, he's been tasked with, like, guarding Asgard while Thor's away. So, but he, so he doesn't have his hammer, but he has, you know, all the weapons in Asgard's, you know, whatever you call it, where they keep the weapons.
Arsenal,
yeah. So Thor's like, you can have, well, you don't have your hammer, but you can have anything you want. While he's guarding it, Asgard is attacked by a symbiote controlled Fing Fang Foom. So he has to protect, you know, he has to fight Fing Fang Foom, and there's really good, like, art in this is great, but there's a lot of, like, battle scenes that are, like, super epic in scale, and he goes back and forth with Fing Fang Foom, you know, grabs him by the tail and slams him, but ultimately he gets his butt kicked, and Thor has to come back to save the day. And Thor's like, you know, what's the deal? And he's like, well, I would have, you know, kicked his butt if I had my hammer. And so they're celebrating Thor, you know, beating Fing Fang Foom, in, like, you know, in the big hall, and they're drinking, and Beta Ray Bill's just totally bummed, and he starts to leave, and Sith follows him, and Sith and him have had, like, a romance kind of starting. So they go, like, back to her place, and they're about to get it on, and he can't turn back into his regular form without the hammer, so she's just like, kind of like, how's this gonna work? And he's like, well, and basically she rejects him because he's in his horse form. Mm. So he, and there's a really good scene where he, like, kind of looks in the mirror and, like, sees his, like, grotesque, you know, face, and then, which Daniel Warren Johnson draws really well. So he leaves, you know, all bummed out. He meets Thor, and he basically says, hey, Thor, you know, this isn't working. I, you know, I can't exist without my hammer. I need to go look for Odin so he can make me a new one. So he gets in his spaceship, and he leaves to basically go find Odin and get another Stormbreaker. So that's the plot of the miniseries. And this book was so good. The art was great. Like, you really felt it when, like, you know, you felt how bummed he was, and the art really goes into that.
It was just kind of funny, because when I was out and somebody was like, well, it's Daniel Warren Johnson, you should have known. I'm like, the Wonder Woman book.
I think I said that.
Yeah, I'm like, the Wonder Woman book she did didn't sell, so yeah. Why would I think that this would sell?
Well,
especially not, you know, how many Beta Ray Bill fans do we have?
Yeah.
Right, but okay. But if I sell 50 Thor and I ordered 40 Beta Ray Bill, wouldn't that be a fair number?
I'd say that's probably more than fair.
Yeah. So.
Oh no, I was not mad that you.
No, I understand. I understand, yeah. But I'm just saying, it's just like, you know.
Yeah. No, but this will be one where, like, I think people will be buying this trade and stuff like that, because
was it a mini or an ongoing?
It's a 5-issue mini.
Okay.
But again,
and even if it wasn't, that's what I would have ended up paying.
Right. True.
But, yeah, I feel like this was hurt Because I think the King in Black, yeah. Be like, oh, it's yeah. a King in Black tie-in. I don't want it. Because
that's like they did the Union, and yeah. I think that all of a sudden it went from being a what was the event before it? Shoot.
Oh, the one right after the pandemic, with
this is not good.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Wow, the scroll one, the key, the
yeah. What was that one?
I can't remember either. Yeah, and I read it.
Yeah, it has. I was Hulkling.
Empire.
Yeah, Empire.
There we go. Empire with a Y. Yeah, went from being an Empire tie-in to being a King in Black tie-in. It's like, okay, yeah. And that was that. It started as a 5-issue mini, and I think everybody kind of went, yeah, you know what?
Never mind.
Not yeah. interested.
So,
yeah, we have some fun looking through next week's books. I'm laughing at quite a few of them.
Yeah.
Pat, you can't plan these things.
No, you cannot plan these things, Colin.
Captain America 28.
It's so, around my pile.
I read this on a Saturday.
I should send you guys a picture of my
pile. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. I read it on a Saturday and, like, thought nothing of it, and then on Tuesday, like, it was trending on Twitter, because in the issue, like, the Red Hood has become like an internet, like, YouTube celebrity kind of guy, like a right wing one.
Red Skull.
Like, yeah, Red Skull. What did I say? Red Hood. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I was Red thinking Skull. That too, but
yeah. Red Skull. He, like, in order to, like, start getting an army and building up support, like, he started to, you know, basically be, I would compare it to, like, well, when I read it, the thing I thought was, oh, they're doing the same thing they did to J. Jonah Jameson in the Spider-Man book, right? He's like a, you know, a talking head.
Right.
But I guess, like, Twitter went crazy because he's, like, everyone thinks that the Red Skull is a parody of Jordan Peterson. Do you know who Jordan Peterson is? Okay. If you don't know who Jordan Peterson is, it's... But, like, there's a bunch of stuff that he says in this as, like, you know, the evil Nazi supervillain that is totally stuff that, like,
Jordan Peterson
says. So, yeah, so that's why Twitter went crazy. But, yeah, this book has been, like... Nothing's happening, and it's very preachy, you know? So, and it's still, like, even in this issue, 28 issues in, like, a guy is still like, oh, you know, Cap, I forgive you for being evil Cap in...
Oh, God, did they, like, never resolve
yeah,
that
they're
yet?
They're still talking about it, and I'm like, just forget about it. Nobody remembers.
Oh, that was come on, that's like five events ago.
That was, oh, more than that.
We can't even remember Secret Empire.
Secret Empire. That was before Civil War II. Yeah. It'll be resolved. It'll be resolved in Civil War IV, though. So.
Oh, wow, before Civil War II.
So it's just like...
And Civil War IV... is going to come before Civil War III, because one, you can't plan these
that's
things.
True. That's three, true. Because, yeah, Civil War III is going to be late because they're going to have some artist. Joe Mad is going to draw Civil War III.
It's just going to be so impressive, it's going to sneak up on
you. Civil War IV is going to deal with time travel, so it's going to happen before Civil War III.
Right, yeah.
Yep. So,
we just wrote this book for Marvel.
Yeah. Two Moons, number two. Did anybody read that?
In the pile.
Yeah,
I did. How far in the pile?
At the top, because the new stuff's at the top.
No, it...
Well, this week's stuff is at the very top, so it's just below that.
Two Moons is... It's different.
Yeah.
So...
Wow. That is a glowing recommendation.
No, I thought it was going to be a werewolf book. It is not a werewolf book.
Well, she's nice.
Instead, it's... this Native American guy tripping balls on peyote.
Yeah. No, it totally is.
Grant Morrison didn't write this book?
No, Grant Morrison did not write this book.
That exact scene is an issue of Animal Man.
Yeah, that's why it was...
Yeah. There's one scene where he talks to... He has, like, a vision of this coyote, and the coyote has, like, like mange and maybe like chunks of flesh taken out of it. It's this really freaking looking werewolfy type of thing. And it gives him like instruction. It's like, talk to the man in the sky and look on the ground and you'll see the, you know, whatever. And then he, they start to lynch him because they tie him to a tree.
He gets rescued by Confederates because they saw him kill a Union soldier, so they figured he must be with them.
Yeah, so he's like a traitor. And once he's rescued, they like escape during the night, and they come across a guy who has been hung, and he's the one.
He's the man in the sky.
He's the man in the sky from the vision, and he looks underneath him, and it's just this mushroom that's like glowing red, and I'm kind of like, wait, what is this? What's this book about?
It's about Virgil tripping balls.
Yeah.
Two Moons is his native name.
Yeah.
Virgil Harris or whatever. He was adopted. His parents died and he was adopted by whites, and that became his adopted name.
So he's having these visions, and like this is like the first day, and then after his second night or whatever, he's supposed to have like a complete understanding of like the universe, because the like growing up with white men have like, you know, the white man has like limited his understanding of nature and his place in it. So I don't know that I'm going to get the next issue of this. It's a little out there. So I don't know. I was expecting more Civil War, you know.
I actually like the book. It just wasn't what I expected. I expected, because like when you open the inside cover, you got like this gritty looking thing in a Union coat, and that's kind of what I expected. And I'm not saying it won't get to that, but so far it has not been that. It's been this guy having, you know, weird psychedelic visions and now tripping balls. So I don't know where this is headed. Yeah. It's not bad. It's just different.
Yeah, it's one of those things, because like I want a book that like I don't know what's going to happen next, but at the same time, like I kind of want to enjoy the process. And I don't know if I'm.
If you haven't read Redneck, read Redneck. It's actually this issue. At the end of this issue, they said they were rolling into their last arc, so I guess it's going to end in a few more issues. Yeah. But it's been absolutely outstanding from the beginning.
Well, that's
Donnie Cates.
Donnie Cates. Yeah, I love Donnie Cates, so I need to read that. Yeah. But yeah, that's it for me.
The only other thing I had left was Manny's Ward.
Man's World.
Man's World?
Oh, yeah.
That extra N throws me.
Manny's World. I was like, I didn't read that one.
It pretty much picks off right after. Though I can't remember in the last issue, did they just leave after punching the guy? Is that why they're
no?
No one went there anyway.
The one guy killed. He stabbed the dude in the back.
Oh yeah, and that kind of got him to scatter, right? Yeah. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're having an argument of, you know, what they should do, like if they, when they make it back, like because like the big UFC fighter guy kind of wants to make up a story, because I don't think he wants them to know like they pissed on him in the last issue, and that, you know, and just getting beat up and like that kind of stuff. So they do they have these rafts, they find a river that they, and they have these rafts, and they to try to escape and, you know, gain some more ground. But there's like these weird like creatures in the water, so they decide once the sun starts to go down, they should probably go and land and camp for the night, because they didn't want to take a chance of, you know, getting it flat in the things while not being able to see what was going on. During the night, one of the people from the group, the guy who stabbed one of the native in the back, the guy with the mustache, he goes to to use the restroom in the middle of the night, and they find him just
there's like nine spears in him. Yeah, he was all messed up.
So, you know, that's like their, so they, you know, they decide to hightail it out of there, and, when they try to get back in the lake, on the other side, it seems like some of the natives had their own boat, so they, have, like, this speed chase on the, out on the open rapids, and, the UFC fighter throws, like a spear or something, and that takes out, like, one of them, and, like, that also kind of causes, like, a, because they're going down, like, little mini, like, waterfalls and stuff like that, and that causes, like, a jam up at one of them, and then, but then they come across, like, a big waterfall, and they go down that, and then that guy, he, like, underwater, when he's underwater, he hits, like, some coral, like, a big rock, and, like, hurts his shoulder. And then the issue just kind of ends with them still like in the in the raft, slowly making the way, and stuff like that. But it's kind of going like what I was kind of had a feeling like each issue somebody's gonna get kind of like knocked off. But this next issue is the last issue I think. But
yeah,
it's good. You know, it's kind of survivor like revenge kind of, you know, story. The most of the AWA books, it's not something like terribly new, but it's done in a creative way. So but that was the only thing that I haven't read yet.
Well, okay. Since you already read everything,
yeah. You guys already talked about my book.
Yeah, so what's coming out next week?
Stuff. Okay, we'll start with DC so I don't forget them. We have Batman and Scooby-Doo Mysteries.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
We have Batman the Detective or Batman the Dark Knight. You have to decide which one.
That's what I was calling you. That's what I was getting confused about, and I called you earlier today. Yeah.
Because
it's one of those.
DC on their website is calling it Batman the Dark Knight, but on the book it should be Batman the Detective.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out next week.
We'll find out, yeah. Well, that'll be fun because I pulled the cover off the DC website, so it's actually going to say Dark Knight. That's going to be good because you can't plan these things.
Nope.
We Batman Urban Legends. That's the anthology book. We have Challenge of the Super Sons, which is their digital first reprint book. Joker number 2, Rorschach number 7, Superman number 30, and Wonder Woman 771. Some of my not favorites. Then we have Chariot number 2. That's from AWA. Children of the Atom number 2. That's a new X book. Daredevil 29. Always a favorite. Darkhawk, Heart of the Hawk. Yeah, because they're everybody's favorite character.
Yeah.
But I forget what the solicit says. Something about the greatest 90s hero. Doctor Who Missy, which is going to be kind of fun. She was a fun character on the show. This is where I'm enjoying this. Fantastic Four 30, King in Black tie-in. Yeah, because that ended today. So,
is this the epilogue?
I don't think so. Maybe. We have Home number 1. I'm not sure exactly what that is. That's from Image. And then we have Homesick Pilots number 5. Yeah, I get caught up on that, but I've been enjoying that. Jenny Zero is a new one from Dark Horse. Jules Verne Lighthouse is a new one from Image. King in Black Namor, number 5. Good timing. We have Lock and Key Sandman Helen Gone, number 1. That one I actually am looking forward to.
Is that a one-shot?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Yeah. Ooh, I didn't realize it's a $7 book, but I don't think it's a one-shot. I'm getting that. And then Pat's favorite book from next week, Man Goat and Bunny Man, number 1.
Damn right.
Yeah. Maniac in New York 3. Some people seem to be enjoying that one.
That book is awesome.
We do have Minky Woodcock, Girl Who Electrified Tesla. We have Nonstop Spider-Man number 2, because you just can't stop it. What can you do, Pat?
Can't play anything.
No, you can only hope to contain it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Nice try. Wrong reference. But that's okay. We have... Yeah, I ordered that in December, so yeah, it's a little
we'll see, it can't even start then.
Yeah. Phantom on scan. I really don't even know which one what this is, but I ordered 10 of them. So, Proctor Valley Road number 2. That's the Grant Morrison book from Boom.
Mike doesn't like that book. I thought Brandon doesn't like that book.
Brandon does because it's Morrison.
Yeah.
What? You liked it?
I didn't read it.
Oh, okay.
But
no one did.
I did. Scumbag number 7, which I believe is starting the next arc.
Well, it sold out the day it came out.
Yeah. Yeah. I got more.
Good stack.
Pick up 1 and 2.
We have Spider-Man Spider Shadow number 1. I think this is more Zdarsky.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have Thor number 14 and Wolverine number 11. So it's nice to be back. I like a 5 Wednesday month because that extra Wednesday is always good. There were some really thin weeks of product where it was kind of like, okay. Because it used to be night you'd have 4 and then like an extra where you got annuals or like DC would do the Rorschach and the stuff, but they didn't really do that. But I mean, DC's output right now is so limited. Or light, I should say. Just not doing the double shipping and not having a ton of titles. I'm glad they're kind of ramping back up. Like, we got Green Lantern out this week and stuff.
Well, it's hard when you have to give 16 pitches in order to just get one to actually become a book.
Is that still going? Or
it's around a week.
Oh.
So, yeah, today was the...
You know when it would have been a good time to do that? During March.
Well, March Madness starts at the end of March,
No, say the championship game was this last, Monday?
Yeah.
Or it was Monday,
yeah.
So.
Well, they should have... It's a Twitter poll. You could do it in 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Look, you can't plan these things.
Yeah.
No. So... April, we're doing AWA month, because they've all been really popular. You guys have really talked them all their books up.
Except for Manny World.
Yeah, Manny World. Spencer's writing that one, so, you know. But the neat thing is they're all $10 books, so it's easy to give it a try. Somebody's looking for something different, and he tried Grendel, Kentucky. So.
And they're all self-contained, which is nice.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it's not your favorite book, it's a $10 read. You know, it's not awful.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, big, as thick as most Marvel trades. So it's AWA month, and that's about it. We, you know, just starting the month, so orders aren't due or anything. I'm just trying to think of anything extra. We're not doing anything yet, because, you know, once I get vaccinated, then I'll hold. Yeah, we'll do whatever.
I got
my first one.
I got my second tomorrow.
Nice.
I'm all done.
I might get one someday.
Well, I think isn't it April 19th?
That's when it opens for everybody.
It's supposed to be for all opens, adults. But good luck scheduling. So, yeah, I'm hoping by June or July. So that's all we got. Mike, since you're here.
And that's the podcast.
We will talk at you next week. See ya.